Welcome back. This is Sources from the Sofa. We're a sports podcast. I'm Rome. We also got Jason. Aaron is MIA in Vegas this week, but he'll catch up with us again on Thursday. We just had two Monday night games. I don't know who was watching, the Dolphins, Titans. I was kind of pulling for the Titans to get a victory. And Lions, man, that was really exciting. But we'll go to that a little bit later on. I really want to talk about college football first, because this is like probably the first big weekend up and down the board.
I thought you weren't going to talk about that Aaron disappeared in Vegas and decided not to record today. I thought so that's what you're going to lead off with at the top of the podcast. Allegedly, you know, he had 22 must games to watch on Saturday, so that must have been exhausting since he was out in Vegas. If he watched all 22 much watched games and then put all the money down that he was talking about for all the winners he was doing, I see no reason for him to return to the podcast, because he'd be just walking away with money at this point.
Well, the funny part is he gave me like 10 games to post on Twitter, like gambling games. I'm like, dude, we have to like narrow this down a little bit. I can't fit it all in one tweet. I have to do it in two tweets. Like, go find the rest on the Dub Club thing. But this guy's getting really into it, which is good. I'm really happy for him, because that's what I
wanted.
It's
good. He's just giving winners to the audience. But, like, we'll see if he returns on Thursday. So that means, you know, his winners weren't as good to not continue the podcast and retire on an island somewhere.
We actually did pretty good on the weekend. Here, let me pull it up real quick, though. I'm trying to find his text. Let's see. We were 8-5 with college football picks. 8-5-2. I don't know. How do we get 2? 61%, allegedly, from Aaron. So I'm going to have to take his word for it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll go. We'll confirm that before he comes back on Thursday, whether it was 8-5.
Yeah, most definitely. He was right about Arizona, though. He called
it. Was right about Arizona.
Yeah, so we'll go to Arizona a little bit. But first, I want to talk about the Alabama-Georgia game. That was a crazy game. Aaron did pick Alabama with the upset. And so my internet went out of my house. So I'm like scrambling, going like bar to bar, trying to watch the games, texting you guys, getting updates. It was so frustrating. But Carson Beck, who everyone thinks might be like a number one pick, kind of struggled a little bit, had a few turnovers, but still had 400 yards. But Jalen tore it up. I've been like a pretty harsh critic on him, like not being like the full complete quarterback package, mainly a guy that just runs with his legs. But not really tossing the ball all that much. But the strides he's made this year, and in this game, 350 yards passing, 100 rushing, 80% completion. Imagine like that. Nothing was bigger than that last throw. It was a 75-yard touchdown bomb to Ryan. What's his name? Williams, who's only 17 years old. Did like a little spin move. Had 6 catches for 177 yards. It was pretty surprising. And now they're the new consensus number one.
Yeah, it was a crazy first half, because you don't see a team get all over Georgia like that, except Alabama. If you were looking at the past, I don't know, there's some stats last like 3-4 years or something, like Bama has got 3 losses, or I'm sorry, Georgia has 3 losses. They're all to Bama, and then they come out and up 21-0 first quarter out of the gate. So you just don't see that in a defense from Georgia. And at that point, I was like, oh, this game's over. Like, I kind of turned it off there at the half. And then, you know, I had a couple buddies texting me too, like you were, about the game. And, you know, a couple of them were big on Bama for that game to win, like Aaron was. And all of a sudden that got a little quiet. And then I kind of peeked back in the score, and George is making this comeback, and then takes the lead, or ties the game up at the end. And then one play later, you know, Bama takes it back. Like it was kind of crazy. You talked about Ryan Williams. Yeah. Like, 6 catches, 177, just insane, you know, 17. Deep balls. That 75, the 75-yard reception, you know, it really put him ahead. Was, you know, it stunned the Georgia fans. I think that's some of the best part about college football. You watch these things, and it's just like, you know, 15, 20,000 people in this one corner that's all for Georgia or whatever like that. It's just, you know, eyes open and just pure shock, because they came all the way back, and in one play it was a dagger, and it was kind of over.
It was crazy. So, like, Kirby Smart, he's 1-6 against Alabama. That's it. It's just a kryptonite. Alabama's his kryptonite. So I was watching College Game Day. I really like
McAfee or Saban?
McAfee. Saban's kind of cool on there, too. Like, it's like the weirdest pairing, but I remember last year how McAfee was singing the Georgia song, and he's like, forget I'm taking Alabama. And then he did it again this year, more or less. I think he was the only one that was taking Alabama for the game. Everyone else had Georgia. They were everyone's number one team. So
Saban didn't pick Alabama?
I don't remember. I think okay. That's when my internet went out.
You know, I will say, if we're talking about the college game, like McAfee, I think, you know, definitely tailors to a particular audience. I think you and I are part of that audience that, you know,
it's a different.
Yeah, it's a different type of, you know, energy and vibe on the show. I think some people that were like kind of the purists of College Game Day, where it's kind of been the college program. Yeah, they were. But I think it's a little change this week. This year, I like Nick Saban on the show. He gives a definite different perspective that it's a, you know, there's a seriousness, but it's a, you know, this is a guy who's done it all at the coaching level, probably the best college football coach ever, but it gives really great insight. And I think it's a good dynamic this year when you're watching that show. But yeah, I mean, Bama, you know, I think really surprised people, you know, and or some people I would say, but because Georgia's been so dominant, we knew it was going to be a great game. But I think that first half was, hey, coming out of the gates, Bama's just going to put them down. And like, wow, this is the class of the SEC potentially, because, you know, people are on Georgia where they're at. People are in love with Texas. There was a lot of hype with Ole Miss, people with Tennessee. You know, so there was a lot. And Bama's, you know, hey, they're not taking this lightly. They got a new coach, but, you know, the cupboard wasn't bare. Tons of talent. And, you know, you got a 17-year-old wide receiver making plays in this game too. So you got even more talent that we don't even know about that Bama's getting. So,
yeah.
You know, the highlight of probably the weekend was that game. It was, you know, great primetime game, and, you know, couldn't ask much more for college football.
For me, and then I also love the Miami-Virginia Tech game.
Which
that's a fucking catch, dude. That Hail Mary, that was a completed catch. I don't know how that got overturned. The play was over, and then they say he fumbled it or he ripped it out. I thought Miami got away with one. And they didn't play very good in the first half. Like, I was really nervous. I was like, what the hell's going on here? Everyone's big on Cam Ward. He had another big game, though. I think he has 5 straight games with 300-yard passing and 3 touchdowns in every game. He's definitely looking every part of what they signed up for. But Virginia Tech, man, I feel bad for them because
there's a certain point. It's funny. Miami, to me, and Rome, you're maybe the same. Miami to me is like one of the programs, because when we were growing up, like, it was that early 2000s Miami team with Sean Taylor and just like, yeah, it was great. And then you know, and then back in the day, the 80s Miami teams were like, you know, the thing as well. But Miami has never won the ACC. They've been in the ACC since 2005. They've never been the ACC champion.
Really?
Yeah, which is crazy to think. So Mario Cristobal, like, excellent recruiter. That is really like why he was brought in.
Yeah.
But a lot of questions about his game management. I think we've talked about it before. And last year, like the infamous, you know, running the ball when he could have taken a knee.
Right.
But Miami, even not in the Mario Cristobal era, this entire time as they've ran through the ACC, like they always have. Oh man, we got a special guest on the pod right now.
Yeah, someone didn't go to sleep yet.
Oh man. But
hand off.
But yeah, going back to Miami, they always have this loss. You know, it's a Thursday, Friday night game. It's versus an unranked opponent. You know, a team that's, you know, solid but not great that they should win. And this potentially could be the turning point for Miami for a season that a lot of people expect them to make the playoff, potentially win the ACC. And you mentioned Cam Ward. I was like, that was the biggest get that this team needed. They needed a quarterback. He has put this team on his back. 4 touchdowns again this week in this game to really, you know, bring them back as they're down at half. So Miami's got an interesting, like, schedule.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. They get a nice little break with Cal this weekend.
They do. Yeah, they do. And then you play, you know, Louisville, like, as of right now, is their only ranked team they're playing. Which a Louisville team that just lost to Notre Dame this last week. So, you know, Cal's a pretty tough opponent. They're playing a bad Florida State team, which probably would have been a good game, but now but it's not. And then you're playing, you know, a bunch of other unranked ACC teams that Miami should go undefeated type thing when you're looking at the schedule top to bottom. But there's going to be a lot of traps in there. Duke has played well. Georgia Tech, they had the Florida State win, but who knows? So there's some challenges, but Aaron picked Miami to win the ACC. I was back and forth on them.
It's looking kind of good, actually.
It's looking good. I thought they'd make the playoff. I think Clemson, I know everyone's pumping the brakes because of week one, but I think Clemson still's got the talent there. And if you're looking at the ACC championship game, Clemson, Miami comes down to it, both teams probably in the playoff at that point come, one way or the other. But yeah, the Miami game was definitely, a great game on a Friday night and a controversial ending that you're going to live for. You texted me and Aaron right away.
Aaron
that was
said
a
it
catch.
Wasn't a catch. Aaron said it wasn't a catch. I'm like, that's bullshit.
I agreed with Aaron just because you had so many people lying out of bounds and limbs left right. and right. Like if they did catch it, I think it was a tough to call that catch. And then initially, they called it a touchdown on the field, but it took
there was
a
not
while.
Enough evidence to overturn it. Like that does not get overturned nine times out of ten.
I think they just wanted to go to replays. The only reason they called it a catch because it almost was like the refs weren't paying attention to make a call. It was don't get completed, and then they're like, oh, this was close. Okay, touchdown, and then we'll review it and see what's up. So yeah, tough call, tough break for Virginia Tech because they challenged them and played them well. But if this is Miami's closest. Game of the regular season, and that gets into the ACC championship game. Maybe they're over the hump, but still a lot of football left to play. But very entertaining game for a Friday night. There's been some really great Friday night games.
Friday night games, but
you had the Illinois Nebraska like a week ago. Then you had this game last Friday night too. So it's college football. Like it's the second biggest sport behind the NFL, and. This first year of the playoff, I'm curious on how the playoff's going to be, but it feels like there's just a little, college football is always popular, but it feels this year there's a little more excitement to what's going on across the country.
Well, it's kind of interesting because a lot of people said that this might diminish the regular season, but I think this heightens this heightens the regular season even more because now it's all about matchups, having these tough wins. You need breaks every once in a while. And you're going to have at least a couple teams that are going to have two or three losses maybe. I don't know. Michigan escapes again. In an ugly, it was like a 50-yard performance. But when you look at all the undefeated teams, let's talk about your Notre Dame real quick because Louisville was pretty good. I think Notre Dame was up pretty handily right in the first half, and then they kind of let the ball drop in the second half. They didn't score for 20 or so minutes.
Yeah, they didn't. They didn't score until the fourth quarter. They were
their offense is looking kind of shady.
Notre Dame's offense has been shady, man. They haven't found the quarterback that is really going to come in and make the plays to really guide this team. They've gotten transfers, the last two starters, Riley Leonard coming in from Duke last year, only threw for 163 yards. But since they lost to Northern Illinois, part of the strategy has been getting Riley Leonard involved in the run game. So he was their leading rusher and leading passer. I think that's still a problem, too, because I think Jeremiah Love, Notre Dame's running back, is the playmaker on offense that they need to kind of get game breaks going. And he only had 11 carries in the game. But the defense is carrying him. Notre Dame has a great defense. And that's what put them in the lead early on. That's what's kept them in these games. Notre Dame, probably a playoff team. It's a biased opinion, I know. Even though you say this is an unbiased pod, but they're a playoff team, but this isn't a team that contends for the national title because you put Notre Dame up against one of those SEC teams, Bama, Georgia, that are just going to be flinging the ball up and down the field, making big plays. Like Notre Dame's not keeping up in a track meet like that. They're keeping these games, very close, defensive minded. And so, but Louisville was a good team and it was a big win for Notre Dame because, that is probably their toughest test until the season finale against USC. So Notre Dame could be walking into that USC game with just the one loss against Northern Illinois, and they have their playoff hopes on the line there at the finale.
Yeah, it's gonna be really interesting. So Notre Dame escapes. Ole Miss was not so lucky, man. I'm a big Lane Kiffin guy, so I always kind of root for him. I always feel bad how he's been fired from every place. And, he probably brings a lot of that drama on his own because he used to be a diva. But they didn't look that good against Kentucky.
Nah, but Kentucky's been, you know, they took Georgia to the wire the week before and,
yeah.
And won this. So, you know, they've been a super competitive team, and that's where you look at sometimes the depth of the AC, or the SEC, where, you know, teams like a Kentucky, which, hey, if they're playing in the ACC, is Kentucky a much better team? But they're going against all these behemoths in the SEC. But, yeah, I mean, disappointing loss. I was as
they
much
don't
pro
have much, yeah, yeah, they just yeah. don't have much more wiggle room for the rest of the season. They play LSU. They got South Carolina, Oklahoma, Georgia, Arkansas, which, you know, depending on the weekend.
Yeah, it's a tough schedule. I think Ole Miss has the talent to go up against LSU. LSU, to me, still shaky. Georgia and Oklahoma definitely be some games. But going back to your comment earlier, I think when you look at what these teams are playing about the playoff, like, this is why I like the playoff, because I want good teams playing good teams and not these guys worried about, like, oh, I'm going to get two losses and now I can't win the national championship. Like, I want ranked teams playing ranked teams and big rivalry games, and I don't want, you know, three games against Georgia Southern and all these other, like,
you mean D2 like the new Pac-12?
Yeah, I mean, I want to see the good teams play the good teams and, like, not be disincentivized to do that. And I think now, hey, you can play tough games during the regular season. You can potentially get a big out-of-conference game to beef up your schedule, too. And then when it, you know, you're battle-tested when it comes to the playoffs. And that's what makes the regular season entertaining. So that's why I don't buy the value of not having the playoff that, oh, it diminished the value of the regular season. I'm like, no, right. Tell that to the Saturday night Georgia-Alabama game that, like, you know, I know it's a conference, you know, it's a conference game, but, like, these are the games we want. And we want schools to schedule these in non-conference games too, where you get a big out-of-conference game that, you know, can have some stakes, but at the same time, it isn't, oh, I'm going to lose the second game of the season because I'm going to go out of conference to play Michigan or something.
So real quick, man, because we got, what, 12 teams going to the playoffs, right? Notre Dame's just right there at 14, just outside. I think they're probably better than LSU at this point, and Ole Miss, I don't know, this can be like a lot of changing of the guard here, and there's been so much turnover at the bottom half. Anyone below rank 20, like, how good are you feeling about the top 12 teams right now? Who do you think might stumble out? Because we're like at a really good spot right here. We're like at the third, almost halfway marker. This is when shit starts getting real for college football.
Yeah, I mean, you got a lot of teams that are going to be playing each other, and I think that's what's going to do it. You got a lot of SEC teams and Big Ten teams. You know, Oregon, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. And then, I mean, I'm looking at the top 12 right now.
Like, does USC stay there? Does Michigan stay there?
Well, okay, the top 12 Mizzou? Right now, top 12 right now, uh-huh. Only one team is not the Big Ten or SEC. It's Miami. Everyone else is Big Ten or SEC. So, I mean, some of these teams are going to cannibalize each other.
I forgot, dude. Oregon, I'm thinking about Pac-12. Like, no, the
you are, but you got to think, like, you know, Oregon, USC, you know, now part of the Big Ten. Like, yeah, so you're top heavy in these two big conferences, and that's what the Big Ten and the SEC wanted. Yeah. Like, we have these two big power conferences. But yeah, they're going to start cannibalizing each other. There's a lot of these games, you know, these SEC games that'll be there, and then I think that's where Notre Dame can come in. That's where Clemson comes in. You still need a representative from the Big 12. I know I was big on Utah, and they lost this last week. But
yeah,
but there's still the shuffling. I think it's early in the season. You're gonna see this play out where, you know, all of a sudden a couple losses to these SEC head-to-head matchups and Big Ten head-to-head matchups. So
is there anybody in the bottom half of the rankings, or even not ranked, that we should kind of keep an eye on? Boise State. Their running back, I can't remember his name. The guy's dominating. Heisman hopeful. He's killing it.
Yeah, I mean, Boise State, you're talking about Ashton Gentry, yeah. I think it is.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, Boise State was my pick for the non-Power 5 contest. Yeah. Like, that's Aaron nice. Was on Memphis. I was on Boise State. UNLV, undefeated right now. You know,
after they lost their quarterback and they didn't miss a beat, man.
Right. So, I mean, UNLV, you know, they could be somebody that, you know, potentially is up there too. I think they're ranked maybe in the coaches poll or something like that, but they're right in the top 25. So, yeah, I mean, they make a play, you know, potentially be there. Because one of those teams that is getting in. I still think it's Boise State, but
I don't think I watched this much college football in a long time. I'm really liking this season. I don't know why. I don't know what's different. And what's crazy is I'm already looking ahead in the draft. In 4 years, that draft is going to be so loaded. You see so many true freshmen killing it right now. And that's been like a rarity because we've been having a lot of these 6, 7, 8 year seniors. And
well, Miami's got like a 9 year senior tight end or something like that. Well, I think the guy's our age. Bo Nix was another one that I felt was in college forever that just got to the pros. So, but yeah, you're right. And not even 4 years in the draft, 3 years.
Three.
You know, if you're some of these guys, you're blown up freshman year. You're not staying all 4 years. Like a lot of these guys get their degree in 3 years and they're out and they're to the pros. And you know, you can't blame them. You know, you want to get to the league as soon as you can. And
yeah. Yeah, I think Ohio State got some really good freshmen. Alabama has a few good freshmen. I don't know. It's going to be a lot of fun. Anything else you want to talk about in college football?
No, it's a good week. I know we'll probably get in some previews. Aaron will have like 47 games for us to watch this weekend, so we'll have to figure out. I mean, I got several TVs in the house, but I don't have enough TVs to keep up with Aaron's must-watch games, so I don't know his setup to have 22 setup? Games on. Huh?
It's ridiculous. They have the big screen, and they have like TVs on the side.
I've seen it, but still, to you know, 22 games to watch. I don't know where he's getting all that. So
it's wild. Just to recap, for our college football picks on Twitter or X rather, also on Dub Club, you can subscribe to the podcast picks. Aaron's kind of leading that thing more or less, but we had a really nice weekend, winning 62% of our bets. So check that out. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk Monday Night Football and a hell of a week for NFL. Cool, we are back. It's just me, Rome, as well as Jason tonight. Aaron lost in Las Vegas. We'll find out how his weekend went on Thursday. But NFL, up and down week, man. We called some upsets. My Steelers, I saw coming, man. I saw it, and despite their best efforts of giving the game away, they almost came back and won. But let's start with the two Monday night games, which... another doubleheader. Thank God there was two, because one was trash. Who would have thought the Miami game would have been this shitty?
I mean, they're playing the Titans. I don't know.
And the Titans were pretty bad, too.
There's something about the AFC South whenever it's an in-division AFC. Actually, Miami's not even AFC South, but you put the Titans on primetime, I'm always skeptical.
It was rough,
generally,
dude.
It's a Thursday night game. The Titans
felt like
are
a Thursday night game, yeah. Well, first, Levitz. He had like this first down like dive. He got the first down, but I have a feeling the coach is just like afraid of challenging it, you know, everything now. It should have been a first down. They punt it. Hurts his shoulder. Mason Rudolph ended up coming into the game. And then you have Huntley on the Dolphins, which this is like, it felt like a weird Ravens Steelers matchup from last year or the year, you know, prior. And
it's the worst of Steelers Ravens. They're playing the two third string quarterbacks.
Man. Oh, it was so rough. Dolphins, you would think Huntley would have opened the game up a little bit. They got some stuff down the field, but nothing much. And probably a good thing that Levis went out, because Mason Rudolph, he actually did pretty decent with the Steelers in relief. And they scored their most points of the season so far. Some field goals. Nick Folk, I totally forgot he was on the team, but they win pretty handily, 31-12. I don't know if we need to talk a lot about this, just that the Dolphins are just heading in the wrong direction. Tua's not coming back to week 8. And then the Titans, happy to see that they got a win.
Yeah, they got the win. I mean, you keep trumpeting these Steeler quarterbacks or former Steelers quarterbacks and what they did. Mason Rudolph threw for 85 yards, man. So, like, he didn't come in and blow. He wasn't contributing to these 31 points as much as you're saying. They got the ball in Tony Pollard's hand. They got the ball in Spears' hand. This is a team that, you know, they're going to run the ball. In this Callahan offense, you know, they're going to run the ball. I think I talk about this every week for teams that need mm-hmm. to utilize the running game. The Titans are going to be one of those teams, because if Levis is in, he's good for one spectacular turnover or meme moment every week. But yeah, Mason Rudolph, 85 yards, 9 for 17. That's not blowing the socks off of anyone. But, I mean, the same time, Huntley threw for 96 yards.
96 yards, dude.
It was a brutal game. When you have Tyreek only getting 19 yards, I don't know. He was 19 yards rushing. Tyreek had 23 yards receiving. Jaylen Waddle had 36. Just – you know, you have these playmakers with that were with Tua last year that were getting up and down the field. It's why a lot of people like them. I like them. The McDaniel offense was, you know, being able to do those Shanahan schemes in the running game and really get anyone to be able to run the ball and open up into the passing game. And it's just been nowhere this year. And this is a team, you know, I like to go with trends a lot with some teams. The Dolphins are a team that plays well in September and October in recent history, and then they collapse toward the end. So it was a team that's this year not getting out to the hottest start, and then they're going to go to a time of the year where they're historically, in these previous years, not doing well in these cold weather games down the stretch. So it could be a rough year for the Dolphins for a season that was supposed to be, hey, this is a team that's going to compete and be in the playoffs and potentially go to the Super Bowl. But at this point, at 1-3, probably not going to the playoffs.
Let's go to the next game. Lions, Seahawks. I think I called out a potential shootout here. It was fun. It was fun. Goff was slinging the ball. He was almost perfect tonight, wasn't he? 18 for 18, just under 300 yards. So, two touchdowns. But Geno Smith, man, this guy balled, almost 400 yards, touchdown, interception. He tried to do as much as he could, but you know, right when the Lions got that last touchdown in the fourth quarter to kind of seal it, like that was it. But it was a fun game. I kind of want to talk about like the last of the unbeatens, because it was the Seahawks, you have Vikings and Chiefs, and then it was Seahawks. I don't know who else was undefeated. Oh, Steelers, they lost this weekend, so it's just two teams left. Aside from this, though, like the Lions, it finally looked like how we all expected this offense to be clicking. The defense was swarming Geno Smith a lot. The pocket was collapsing.
It was a great game. Like it was good. Like you said, like. The Saturday night Bama-Georgia game we were talking about, yeah. Great primetime Saturday game. This was a Monday night game. Like you said, thank God we had two, because if we were sitting with Dolphins-Titans only, it probably would have not been the most exciting. But, yeah, this one was up and down the field, and Aaron was big on the Seahawks earlier in the year. I was not convinced here in year one post-Pete Carroll, but yeah. Geno continues to surprise, and, you know, in a division that so far hasn't been, you know, they've been the class of the division with San Francisco struggling, all the injuries to the Rams and where they're sitting. The Cardinals have had one good game, but then they're sitting at 1-3 as well. So, you know, Seahawks still sitting good, you know, with their first loss of the year, and they've been impressive offensively. But yeah, the Lions getting back where they're supposed to be. Aaron and I both agreed that the NFC North is the best division in football, and the Lions are supposed to be the class of that. And this kind of proved that they are back on track.
They woke
where
up.
We thought they would be offensively and woke up. So it was a matter of time. It's a team that I've always kind of questioned because of Goff. Like there's something
really
about
tough
Jared,
on Goff. You're really tough on
it. It's always been a thing for me. Like there's a reason Sean McVay got rid of him, is that he wasn't putting the Rams over to that next step. And when, the Rams potentially could have gotten maybe more out of that core to win Super Bowls, and they only got the one title. And it was always seen as Goff not coming up in big moments in a lot of like primetime games or in the playoffs. So,
yeah, so go ahead.
No, but he's been better with Detroit, and it's been really this reckoning of a quarterback that's, you know, matured and developed. But I think, you know, one of my friends will text me, you know, Goff's going to Goff. And at a certain point, you know, and last year, you know, bias versus the Bears, like, you know, the Bears beat the Lions last year when the Lions were good and the Bears were not so good.
Right.
And it was one of those games where Goff's turning the ball over and doing some of that stuff. So, but all in all, right now, this is a level set game. They're back, you know, at top of the near the top of the NFC North. You have an undefeated Vikings team that's still there, but going to be a real test down the stretch. And it's good to see this Lions offense get back to where it was because, you know, Ben Johnson, that was the guy I wanted for Bears head coach in the offseason. I still think he probably should be the Bears head coach, but he gets the most out of this offense for, you know, the creativity and how he mixes things up in the running game and the passing game.
So save those thoughts, because I do want to talk later on our first official hot seat list. I got all five right. Names right here of who should be a little worried. And I definitely, the Bears are on there. So let's talk about the Vikings though. They win against the Packers. Love did come back, so that was a good call by you. I kind of got nervous. I think I had the Vikings, straight up, but they were up big, and then I didn't catch the end of the fourth quarter. Packers scored 22 points and made it a lot closer than what it was initially. Jordan Love balled out, though. He almost had 400 yards, four touchdowns, but he did have three interceptions. I'm not sure how many of those were on him. But Sam Darnold, again, solid, although there was some weird play calling stuff. I was like, oh, this is like the Sam Darnold from the Jets. But they made it out alive. Justin Jefferson killing it. Really fun.
I mean, it's been so shocking for the Vikings. When you look at the Vikings and I think the Steelers, you were worried about the Steelers going into this week. Just these classic kind of NFL, we've won a couple games in a row. We're due for kind of a letdown game. Happens a lot in the NFL where teams go. And that's what I felt in this Vikings game, because maybe this would have been this has been it. Like the Packers, have been, kind of so far because Love got hurt. And, they've been doing different things with Willis. But the Vikings have been this like, hey, we're up and down the field scoring touchdowns, and now we're going to have this NFC North rivalry game that, is a big game for both franchises and both fan bases. I was talking to a friend of mine that was a Vikings fan, and he was talking about the thing, and he asked me what I thought about the game. I'm like, man, this just feels like a game you guys are just going to drop because like, it's just, something's going to happen. It's going to be a weird game. But they came out and were just blowing them out. I'm like you, I'll be honest. I didn't watch much of the second half because I was like, this thing's 28-7 at the half.
Yeah, it's over.
Call it a wrap. And, Jordan Love got a lot of praise for his second half of the season. Obviously got hurt, so it's not been the thing. But three interceptions in this game, threw for a bunch of yards and had the four touchdowns. But the turnovers and his first game back from injury. But there was questions, I think, on, non-serious Twitter accounts that, Willis was, we should have kept Willis in, that's where the running game was coming from and this and that. But yeah, it's, you'll find all the irrational stuff, but big win for the Vikings. Aaron and I both were saying this was the fourth place team in the division because of Sam Darnold, and he has proven everyone wrong. There wasn't anyone saying that this was going to be, this is going to be the shocker of the league, that we thought that, hey, this team's going to take a step back offensively. They're going to struggle to get Justin Jefferson the ball. But when you have Justin Jefferson, man, you can put it up and he's going to make plays for you. And Sam Darnold, has stepped up with that. So interesting. We talked about Geno Smith and Sam Darnold, like former Jets, quarterbacks that have gone, kind of around the league a little bit and saw some things and came to, find themselves a little bit in these roles. And, there's a lot of conversation as we look at the rookie quarterbacks too, kind of switching the subject a little bit, but like a lot of the expectations is, and I'm always obsessed with this, cause I like the salary cap stuff and team structure and how you build a team and like the philosophy behind building a winning team in the salary cap era is like, if you got the quarterback on a discount, you get to spend in other areas and really put a lot of talent on the team. So, but once you pay that quarterback, hey, you're not getting the high price pass rusher or a big time wide receiver or what that might be. And so, there's a rush to play rookie quarterbacks is kind of the biggest thing. But once you rush them and they're not ready for all that goes into being at the hardest position in professional sports, and then you dismiss them right away, I think Sam Darnold, Geno Smith has definitely proved that. Hey, you go around the league and you're just around for a while and you get some playing time here and there. Like there is these guys had first round talent, so it was there.
Yeah.
Putting it together sometimes takes time. And we've seen that in a couple of different spots. So
I'm a firm believer, ending up at the wrong situation, the wrong team can totally dismantle your career. We've seen it so many times. So just bad landing spot, not the right structure, coaching changes. Half these rookie quarterbacks have like a new offensive coordinator every single year. Like look at Baker Mayfield. Yeah. A new coordinator, a new coach every year. And even now he has like a new coordinator again and down in Tampa.
So. Yes. Yeah. ESPN did something. It was around that draft class. You mentioned Baker Mayfield. Cause it was Baker. Uh-huh. It was Sam Darnold, Lamar Jackson, like a bunch of people in this draft class. It turns out, I think only Josh Rosen was the only person that was chosen from your UCLA Bruins that I think has been out of the league for a while. But, but it was an interesting draft class on like where all those guys are sitting from a starting point. And some of them didn't succeed in their first spot, but the guy like Baker, Sam Darnold, and some of these, other ones, like have found a place and had success.
So we talked about the Vikings. They're 4-0. That division's stacked, dude. So Vikings 4-0. Lions got the win today, so 3-1. The Bears and Packers still alive at 2-2. Since we talked about the Vikings, I just want to do, like, what are the biggest wins this week? So I want to tell you my biggest wins and then get your opinions on that. I think – so we got Vikings, Panthers. I thought it was a really important divisional win. I think Bucks upsetting the Eagles is really huge.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. The Eagles are pretty hurt, though. They didn't have, I think, both starting wide receivers, and so there was and some other injuries. So there was questions going into that game. But you know, the Bucks have been able to really put it on people and be 3-1 right now. And Baker's been the shining star. And I don't know if we're skipping segments right now, but if you're talking about hot seat, I think you're looking at the Eagles with Nick Sirianni right now.
They're on there.
Because they wouldn't have patience with the man last year when they kind of collapsed down the stretch. And 2-2 right now, potentially, you know, should have been, I don't know, 3-1 with that Falcons game. But I think there's going to be a lot of questions, you know, with that team. But that was a very impressive win by the Buccaneers to really kind of keep pace in that NFC South division with – you know, the Saints falling, the Falcons getting to 2-2, and now, hey, the Bucs are leading the way.
Spangles and Panthers.
It was a need win for the Bengals.
Must.
Like, you can't, yeah, you that I you always talk about must win games. Like, you are 0-3. You are facing what many consider the worst team in the league. You got to win this one, and you leave everything on the table. They did. The
you
Panthers.
The Red
Rocket
almost pulled it out again, too.
He did. Chuba Hubbard, you know, running back for the Panthers, had 104 yards. That was out there. But, you know, the Bengals needed to win this game, and they did. And I think that was getting them on the track. I think, I don't know, the second or third season they've started with kind of this slow start where things are at. But they, you know, it's not going to get easier for them because, you know, they're going to play the Ravens, you know, twice. They're going to play the Steelers later on this year. They got a game against the Cowboys. So there's some tough games that they're going to have. Now they're going to get some Giants and Browns and some of that stuff mixed in, too. But you got to win this game. You're not making the playoffs at 0-4. It's already a tough at 0-3 and being at 1-3 with this win now. So
there's just been one 0-4 team that's made the playoffs.
Who
just
was that?
One. The 92 Chargers, San Diego.
92. Okay.
Yeah, they were 0-4, and I think they finished 11-5. Is that right?
I don't know. You're telling
something
me.
Something like that, yeah. I read it earlier today. I thought that was kind of crazy. Yeah, big win there. Bucks Eagles, that was big. Commanders Cards, I thought that was a big win by the Commanders. Some people said that, you know, was last Thursday kind of fluky. Jaden Daniels, dude, I can't believe like how good he's playing. They had like a stat that he has like the highest passing completion percentage in the first four games of the season at 80%, something ridiculous. He has more touchdowns than incompletions. It's wild, and I'm really happy for Washington fans because it's been like a graveyard, just like Browns, I guess, right? A graveyard of like quarterbacks. But Jaden looks legit. He looks like the real deal. Looks like everything that they did, the new ownership, new coaches. I don't know. Are they going to turn that division around? I thought that was a really, really, really big win, especially with the Cards, how they've been playing on offense as well.
Yeah, I mean, Washington, they have some interesting, you know, weapons around their team. Brian Robinson Jr., really, really solid running back, and they gave him the ball 21 times yesterday, and he got over 100 yards. I've always been a big fan of Terry McLaurin, and I think he's succeeded whatever quarterback Washington's thrown out, and you know Jaden's been able to get him the ball, but I think the unique combination that Jaden's had between both passing and running. So, hey, he's able to run the ball, and he has just freakish athletic ability that you saw in college. It has translated pretty well to the pros. But, hey, he's also super efficient with the ball and, you know, has the high completion signs, like you said. And, you know, he had the one interception in the game, but, like, it hasn't been disastrous turnovers that has really, like, derailed the team. So, Washington's off I want to say a surprising start because I don't know if many people saw this for the lack of overall team talent, you know, new coach first year, not sure what you're going to get out of that first year, but the building blocks are there for, you know, a ton of success in the future for them.
considering the talent that Arizona has, especially on offense, I thought this was like a big win to show the rest of the division that they are for real. 3-1, they held the Cardinals to only 14 points. They scored 42, man. That's an ass whooping.
Yeah, the Cardinals have been, I don't know, they blew out the Rams, and that was the Marvin Harrison kind
right.
of like
yeah.
show out game. Party. Yeah, and then but that was really the highlight of the year. They kept it close against the Bills in week one. You know, offense wasn't as great versus the Lions, which was interesting. So last two games, they've only scored 13 and 14 points in Arizona. So yeah, sometimes with Kyler, he has high talent, but is it consistently every week we're putting things together? Pretty sure Aaron and I both saw this team finishing last in the division. And so far, I don't think that changes. This is a team that's going to probably have just some highs that is going to be
who
super, super, you know, big Marvin Harrison catches and some spectacular plays. But I think that's just going to be it. And it's going to be a last place team.
I don't remember what I had them as, but them, their coach, as well as the Bengals coach might make my hot seat list if things keep on going the way they're going later on the year. Last big win that I thought was really huge, Ravens just dismantling the Bills. Bills have been on fire. I didn't think they showed up this Sunday, though. They looked like they were checked out right from the beginning. Baltimore definitely needed the win more than the Bills did, and they showed out. Derrick Henry, thank God he's out of Tennessee. I'm really happy for Henry to have the year that he's having so far. Almost 200 yards, touchdown, just dominating.
Yeah, I mean, the first play of the game, like, you know, I was out.
Broke out.
Out
right?
and about watch. I was out and about watching this game, and all of a sudden it turned around, this big play happened. I was like, was that the first play? Like,
yeah. Just,
you know, it was crazy run, and they're getting him the ball. A lot of questions about Derrick Henry of how much he has left, but they fed him yesterday. 24 carries. The one big run, obviously, but another one. So, I mean, that's going to set up Lamar pretty well. On the flip side, I was not happy with the Bills as far as, you know, James Cook. They got a running back that I've talked about week over week. He got the ball 9 times. And
is
just,
he on your fantasy team?
He 100% is, obviously. Why am I not talking about it as much? All right? It was a steal in, like, the third round or something like that. But, yeah, so I'm going to talk about him every week. So my team goes where he goes. But yeah, I think that is the skill. That's the skill player on this Bills team that will make the rest of the offense, like, open up on the receiving game with Coleman and Shakir and stuff. Like, you really need to establish that for Josh Allen. And if he's just out and about slinging it and there's nothing, no threat from the running game, I think that's why you'll get behind in these games, where when Cooks had some big performances, it's allowed Allen to go out and make plays and do things too. So, but overall, I think these are one of those.
They look the Ravens. Yeah.
Well, the Ravens had to win this game.
Yeah.
The Bills are 3-0. It was, you know, at home in Baltimore, which is, I don't know. There's something about when they play in Baltimore. It just looks like there's like fog everywhere all the time. It's like, and it's just like a gloomy atmosphere, and it's just like, it feels like a great home field advantage for the Ravens. Anytime I watch a Ravens game, and it's just like, whenever they're playing this night game in Baltimore, it just feels like, and everyone's wearing all black with the black uniforms. Like, I it's one of the best viewing things when I watch like Ravens games, and it just feels like Ravens are going to roll.
Have you been to Baltimore?
I have not.
It's like a mixed bag of a city. Like, it's gritty. It's nice at the same time. I guess every big city, but they have like an edge to it. But yeah,
any reference for me for Baltimore is going to be The Wire.
Oh, dude,
so that's just,
I love The
that's
Wire.
That's just what I'm going to think Baltimore. I'm going to be like doing like random Wire quotes.
I avoided watching The Wire for a long time. And then finally I ran out of shows. I'm like, fine, I'll give it a shot. But it was a great show.
Oh, I mean, it is.
I loved it.
Top five show of all time. Like,
really? Your top five?
Yeah, it's in my top five.
What is your top five? Here, we'll just do like a quick little segment. What is your top five? Top five shows.
Top five TV shows.
TV shows. Yeah, that's tough. No pressure. Maybe we can come back to it.
We'll come back to that. We'll save that for off season stuff. Off season stuff when there's no good football going on. When we have to talk NBA that I won't care about.
Dude, you and Aaron don't care about the NBA. It's gonna be mean. So yeah, those are the big wins. Big losses. I think these were terrible losses. We mentioned Eagles, Bucks. Eagles completely shat the bed. Steelers, Colts, I don't know if that's a bad loss or not. You know, they were bound to lose. Richardson, we talked about it on this podcast before. He looks really hot and then really not. Really hot and cold on his athletic ability. And
it was, maybe I'm it was wrong. Funny. It was funny for me because this is the one week Justin Fields, like, he threw for 312 yards in this game. And I'm like, okay, he's making some plays that others question. He had 55 yards rushing. Like, it wasn't this, you know, terribly, like, on the ground 3 yards and punt in a cloud of dust and whatever. Like,
yeah, that's some Fields bad play, though. Like, he had a bad turnover. I'm like, this is the Fields that I remember from Chicago. Like, fuck me.
Yes. I mean, that, and I think he took a bad sack at a certain point, too. That was a pretty big...
Yeah, it didn't go down.
I didn't see it. So,
fumbled it.
Yeah. I mean, that was always the knock on Fields, is like making these negative plays in there. But I mean, overall, the rest of the game I think was pretty positive. Richardson went down. Tons of questions on the coach for Richardson getting, you know, hurt. Then he goes back in and immediately does like a running play with Richardson the next play, which puts him out. You know, that was the thing. Flacco comes into the game. You know, I think Joe Flacco might be the greatest, you know, backup quarterback ever right now. Just,
yeah. This guy won't die.
No. It was funny. Is like his post-game interview, sideline reporter asked something about like Anthony Richardson basically saying like, you know, hey, yeah, he thinks Joe Flacco's cool. And Flacco saying like, I don't know how seriously or how cool he thinks I am, because Flacco's like, I don't know, like 8 days younger than Anthony Richardson's mom or something like that.
Oh, really?
So like, yeah. So like, you know, you're playing with polar generations right now, where, oh, like, Flacco's old enough to be Anthony Richardson's dad right here. But yeah, Flacco comes in. I, you know, it was interesting, you know, with Flacco coming in. I was watching that Miami game. Well, I wasn't really watching it, but you had Mason Rudolph and Huntley going, and I had a friend text me, like, you know, in a group, saying, you know, why aren't NFL teams like investing better in backup quarterbacks? And it immediately thinks to like a Flacco that, hey man, this is a guy that he's going to come in, you won't see the drop off. Now, on the flip side, why they don't invest in backup quarterbacks is because there's not many people that play this position great. But, you know, someone like Flacco has proved his worth as being a guy that can do some starts. And since I know the Falcons got a ton of heat for drafting Penix after having Cousins and stuff like that, but like in hindsight, you know, now I think maybe the value of taking Penix where is that is the questions, because they probably maybe could have traded back and still got Penix, whatever it might have been, but like, well, in hindsight, you
more things. Yeah,
yeah, but in hindsight, in the 17 game schedule, like how many QBs are playing all 17 games, you almost need to have a quarterback that's in a backup quarterback that's going to be able to start a couple games throughout the season, because your quarterback is probably going to get some, you know, dings, and there's going to be an opportunity where your backup's going to have to step in. So there's something to be said from that as the season is longer, you know, the travel potentially a little more now that almost, you know, every team's playing an international game, or majority are having an international game. And then you got the Thursday, everyone's playing Thursday night games and short weeks and things like that. So, you know, when it comes to the playoffs, to the end of the season, one game can matter, and it could be like, hey, did you have a backup quarterback that can come in and, you know, make a couple plays and manage the game?
Yeah, I was on the Falcons' ass about that just because he was a high pick. He's a little bit older, so you don't want some guy that old sitting 2 or 3 years. They gave Cousins that fat contract. Who would have known like how he was going to come back? He looks okay, I guess, right, you know, right now. Rodgers looked like shit, but
Good point. that was an interesting game. I was flying during the morning.
That's a bad
games.
Loss. That's also next on my list. Jets Broncos. That's
not bad loss.
Just a bad loss.
Just a bad game. I know it was raining pretty bad in the Meadowlands, and that was kind of part of the beat. But then it's raining a ton, but you can't establish the running game, and Breece Hall goes 10 carries for 4 yards. Like, you have one of the best running backs in the league, but you're going to have 42 pass attempts for Aaron Rodgers in the rain.
Way too much.
In a game that's not a shootout. Like, this is where sometimes when you lose yourself in the game, where I got a quarterback, he has to have the ball in his hands. Like,
no.
You know, I question you don't win this game because in a bad conditioned you know, in a bad condition game, you only got 10 carries for Breece Hall, 8 for Braylon Allen. How are we not, like, doing things more creatively to protect the ball, run the ball, and not try? But, yeah, 42 attempts and Rodgers in that weather I thought was kind of a mismanagement that partly due to why they lost.
Bad play calling. Broncos had no business winning in New York. 10-9, Bo Nix, only 60 yards. It was just a ugly game. So those are like my big three biggest losses. I don't know if there's like another game that kind of stuck out for you, but
no,
that kind of segues into like my hot coaching or like my hot seats for coaches.
The hot seat. All right.
The hot seat. If you want to hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's hear it.
And then we can kind of circle back on some games, but the hot seat right now after the fourth of the season. So Nick Sirianni, Doug Peterson, Matt Eberflus, Dennis Allen, and Robert Saleh.
I don't know about Dennis Allen.
He was a popular pick to get fired right in the beginning of the season, but they did have like those two outstanding games that that's still fooling everyone right now. So he kind of saved himself there. They're a 2-2. Robert Saleh, though, I've been saying this for years. I don't even know if he's a good NFL head coach. And I know Aaron's a big fan of his, but I just like he just looks lost. He doesn't look engaged. He's just staring at the OC, just throwing up plays out of his ass. He just always looks stumped.
The OC is Rodgers' guy that
I know.
You know, bombed as a head coach in Denver. But yeah, I think if you ask anyone in New York media about Robert Saleh, like, it's been questions forever. Maybe potentially, why is he still there right now?
Do they like him?
Puts a solid defense out there. You know, was one of the orchestrators of a great defense in San Francisco, but they've consistently pumped out good defensive coordinators out of San Francisco. So sometimes it's questioning whether it's actually that defensive coordinator or John Lynch, you know, puts a heck of a defensive team of talent out there for these guys to do something. So yeah, if the Jets don't make the playoffs, Saleh's 100% gone. This was his kind of prove it year. So I don't disagree with you on that. The questions you have on Saleh is what I have on Eberflus as the same. Like, is he's a, you know, Matt Eberflus is, I, he has put a great defense out there. I think you can say the Bears defense is of his architecture, and the reason the Bears are to have two wins is because of the defense, not because of the offense. But this is a cycle that happens with Bears coaches all the time that are like the defensive, like, you know, guys, because, hey, we have a top five NFL defense that the city of Chicago loves because we love defense, but can't make the hires or whatever, do anything offensively to pair with that defense, and the defense has to do too much. So, you know, the Bears win this game versus the Rams because of the defense, not because of Caleb for the most part.
I almost had that upset, dude, but they pull out the victory, so congrats. And then Taylor Swift's cousin, DeAndre Swift, he had a pretty good game. So
yeah, that, I mean, and he was the one, I know, under fire from, like, they gave him a big contract
to be the running back this year.
He's been nothing. This, and even early in the game wasn't great, but I think where, you know, he really came to it was like he had a big screen pass that he took, you know, the distance. I think it was at the end of the first half that really set him up, and then had a couple big runs, a 36-yard one, I think, being the longest one. But, you know, he had 7 targets in the passing game for 72 yards, had the 16 carries, and that was kind of – that he was supposed to be the Swiss Army knife. But I think Roshan Johnson, the backup running back, is the guy that runs in between the tackles. The criticism for Swift, he is doing lateral runs, taking things from the outside, and it's not getting anywhere, where – I think some of the strength of what the Bears need to do is run up the middle with Roshan between the tackles. So if they get a balance, I think that's where it's at. But there was a lot of questions.
Bears gear too. Look at you.
It was a big Bears win, man. I got the coach's gear on. You know,
was it a big win, or was it more like, you know, just the Rams were just depleted and, you know, someone had to win?
I mean, for me, it's a big win because it's the Bears. So every win's a big win because I'm talking so much trash of everything. This is my one team that's going to be good this year. And I'm a huge fan of Sean McVay, and even with all the injuries, I think he gets the most out of a lot of his talent.
He does, yeah.
But yeah, I still think it's a big win for the Bears because they're gonna have some tougher games later in the season. But they had a very soft schedule to start. The Rams are an injured team. You got to win this game. Still haven't really put that complete Caleb Williams performance together. But there was a particular throw, his touchdown pass to DJ Moore, was a particular, you know, hey, this is an NFL starting quarterback, a top tier guy that stands in the pocket, steps up in the crowd, throws a dime in the back of the end zone. That was the type of play you want to see from Caleb Williams that people like question stuff. And then I was trying to pull up. There was a pretty, you know, I will always find a random stat on X that's going to give me I can't find it, but basically Caleb Williams had a 124.5 passer rating when under pressure in week 4, the highest in the NFL among all QBs.
Wow. Okay.
So that was,
impressed.
To me, under pressure, that the early in the season, the Bears O-line couldn't block very well, and he's under duress, and he was making some big plays in this game. So still some things to clean up. But I think going back to Eberflus, I think he's definitely in the hot seat because if this team doesn't make the playoffs, he's out.
This is too much. I know, man. I'm telling you, Jason, playoffs is too much.
I'm just saying he has to make the playoffs because you are not going to – if they keep him and
they
don't make
weapons,
the
– and they haven't done anything really on offense.
They haven't. And so that's going to be – it's going to get to a conversation depending how Caleb's performance is. Is Eberflus the right coach? Has he hired the right people that's going to develop Caleb Williams, because the Bears have put it there. And Shane Waldron, like, I was critical in the first couple of weeks, and everyone in Chicago. I wasn't the only person. And Shane Waldron had a big meeting this week among team captains and himself, and reflecting on feedback of his play calling, which is good. I'm glad you're being accountable to that. But I think how that offensive goes and where Caleb's developing, that is going to tie to Eberflus's job status, because if you don't make the playoffs and there isn't huge strides for Caleb Williams, like, there's going to be a lot of calls like, you need a head coach that's going to do something. I mentioned Ben Johnson earlier in the podcast from the Lions. Like, this is a guy who's got the most out of Jared Goff. He was a hot head coaching candidate in the offseason. Like, everyone thought he was going to the Carolina Panthers, and he basically said, no, I'll just go back to Detroit and be an OC. So he's going to be very particular. He knows he's the hot candidate. He's going to be very particular on the situation. You know, potentially could the Bears be that right situation they go up, because he's going to look for a team that has a quarterback. So, but yeah, Eberflus, he needs the win. So you're right on there.
Eberflus, Saleh for sure. I guess we'll skip Dennis Allen, but he's on my list as well. But Nick Sirianni and Doug Peterson, Jacksonville lost again. And I was kind of surprised how close that game was. Texans kind of etched that out a little bit, but Stroud was money. Trevor Lawrence, I think we kind of talked about this with Young. A lot of his throws just seem like they're just sailing over the receivers, dumb interceptions. He looks lost with the play calling there. Doesn't look confident. I wasn't a big Trevor Lawrence guy coming out of college, so I didn't think he was the guy. But once they got rid of Meyer Urban and brought in Doug Peterson.
Urban Meyer.
Meyer Urban. Oh, damn it.
Were you saying it Meyer, Urban? Like, we're just doing last name, then first name?
No, totally flipped that one. I like Doug Peterson. I thought he should have never got fired on the Eagles. But he did good initially, and now I don't know what the hell's going on there. But that seat's got to be hot.
I would assume it is. I think there's a ton of questions around Trevor Lawrence because consensus number one, he was top prospect out of college. This is the guy that you're going to build around. Already got the contract, but there's a lot of stats out there. And when I was trying to be Justin Fields apologist with the Bears, there was a lot of stats that basically said Trevor Lawrence is Justin Fields. Statistically, there was a lot of things that lined up for what you expect Lawrence to be that he hadn't been thus far. And now a collapse late last season, 0-4 to start the season.
10 straight losses now.
Is it 10?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I don't think you're wrong. This is a very, this is an organization that has not had a ton of success in Jacksonville. Like they've had a great team and then they're terrible. Get to a great team and then terrible.
They're the weirdest team. Cause I was a big fan. Oh man. I thought they should have went to the Super Bowl that one year.
They should have beat the Patriots. They should have.
Who was the quarterback? He had like two good years.
Bortles?
Yeah.
Blake Bortles.
I thought he was decent. Yeah, they finally put the pieces together, dominated that one year. What, they were like 13-3. Went to the playoffs. Yeah. And then after that, they just fell apart again. Restarted. They brought in what's his face from the Giants to kind of lead all the player development. Coughlin, he only stays for a couple years. New ownership, Urban Meyer, and then he's gone, and now Doug Peterson is. I don't know what the hell goes on in Jacksonville.
Yeah, interesting ownership group there with the Khan family. I know Shad Khan owns the team. His son Tony Khan runs All Elite Wrestling. Which I'm,
really?
I'm a big wrestling fan. So his son has started a wrestling company a couple years to compete there. Yeah. So, and it's been, pretty successful as being a challenger brand, but it's a family that also owns a Premier League football team. They own Fulham. So they're invested in a lot of different sports, but, the Jaguars specifically haven't been a team that they put a lot of on-field success. It's interesting how, the Jaguars play, I think, two London games. They play two games in London where they're growing their brand potentially internationally.
That's home games, yeah.
Yeah, where they have some home games in London and stuff like that. So Jacksonville's an interesting market, because it's not one of your traditionally big markets. In the NFL, I guess Duval County, baby. So, going back to Peterson, 0-4, 10 straight losses if you're going back to last season. Like, things got to turn around. They play the Colts this week. If you're going against Flacco or injured Richardson, like that should be a winnable game for them. Then they play the Bears in London after that, which, I'll say the Bears win, but hey, that should be a winnable game for Jacksonville too. Like, they should be able to be competitive with the Bears. So, and then I think they come back in the Patriots after the week after. So, I think they have back to back London games. That's crazy. I think they play Bears and Patriots both in London. Yeah. Look at their schedule, right? So
I think out of all the divisions, Texans have nothing to worry about in that one.
No, and historically that's been one of the worst divisions.
Has it?
Titans.
Titans, been
Titans
good.
Jaguars, Colts, Texans has been usually is one good team and three junk.
Yeah. Especially Houston.
And they put the junk on Thursday Night Football.
Oh, dude, they do. Well, let's go to my other one, Nick Sirianni. Do you think that's getting hot over there?
Oh, it was hot last season when he collapsed. It's a bad loss. Talked a little before. Yeah, bad loss against the Bucs. You mentioned Doug Peterson. Like, the guy won the Super Bowl for them, and he wasn't safe after he wasn't successful for a few years. So,
dude, they fire coaches like nothing. They don't care.
Yeah, so there's a lot of people that think Belichick circling around this job.
That's what I'm hearing.
So
Belichick watch.
Yeah, I think it is interesting with some of these jobs you call the hot seat, because there is a very interesting and strong coaching pool of guys looking for jobs. And I think Belichick thought he was getting that Falcons job, and they think they two interviewed him, and then out of nowhere, I think Arthur Blank, rumors were he was talked out of it by several people, and that's why they didn't go that way. But the most successful NFL coach of all time, I don't know if you call him the greatest, but definitely the most successful coach.
Most successful.
I mean, he's going to be, I mean, he has the Super Bowl creds no one else has, but he for Belichick, he wants complete control, and that is that's a different conversation when you go to different organizations, because people don't want to give up control. That was some of the rumors behind the Falcons, is that they didn't want to give up, some of that control there. So
if he didn't draft so shitty with the Patriots, I'd say give him full control. But I do like a potential Belichick fit either with the Eagles, and I kind of like him going back to the Jets, the job he was supposed to take anyways before he bounced out to the Pats.
I don't know if it's the Jets or it's the other New York team.
Giants?
I mean, there's people talk about him going back to the Giants, dude, where he was. he was a successful defensive coordinator, and the Giants have looked pretty bad. Dayball's, I think, only in year two. Year three. And so they look like they're last place in the NFC East. That could be a team, if you're taking Dennis Allen out, is Dayball on the hot seat. And, you know.
People like Dayball, though.
I think people like Dayball, but their GM has not been great.
Got to go.
They have tied themselves to Daniel Jones. That has been probably the biggest, you know, regret for Dayball at this point, because.
Well, they're idiots.
Yeah, so I don't know. The people have been talking about the Giants. The Jets is an interesting thing for Belichick, too. But I think keep an eye on the Giants, because if the Commanders continue to win, the Cowboys, you know, generally have a pretty solid regular season, depending on where the Eagles at. The Giants are last place in the NFC East, and they could be looking for a new coach.
It's a bad Cowboys team. That's a bad Cowboys team.
The Cowboys regular season, though, always seems to work out. And
this
so
looks
we just,
different.
We look forward to the January Cowboys, where it's just gonna, you know, we're gonna hear the legion of Cowboy fans come out, and then they're gonna be unhappy. So
yeah, no, if I was a Cowboys fan, I'd be definitely nervous. That whole division is kind of weird, though. But I didn't think about Dayball. Anybody else you want to talk about?
Hot seat right now. I gave you my spiel on the Bears this week. If we want to go Bears corner, so I think I gave you a notch. We'll be back next week to give you the breakdown of their next opponent.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you the panic meter, but they won. You're wearing Bears outfit, so I'm not gonna ask you this week. We'll skip it.
No, we're in 100% pro Bears this week.
Yeah, I'm digging it. I think we kind of covered it more or less.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I don't think
I really have
more.
Nothing to say on Saints Falcons. I have nothing to say on 49ers Patriots Browns Raiders.
I mean, someone had so the Browns Raiders. Someone had to win the game. I think that's what you talk about for that one. So.
That was rough.
I mean, Chiefs Chargers, interesting. I think more so. I think you've been down on the Chiefs as much as any the entire year. And are they one of two undefeated teams?
Another game that they could have lost.
Another game they could have lost. I mean, they did lose on the injury front. You know, they lost Rice for the year. And that's big, because he's supposed to be, you know, the heir apparent to Tyreek to be the game changer. Maybe they have it in Xavier Worthy, because, you know, they had that huge bomb from Mahomes to Worthy that was kind of almost vintage Patrick Mahomes to Tyreek back in the day, but that was like the only big play really of the game. But Kelsey got a little more involved this week, had seven catches, and then the Kareem Hunt sighting. Yeah, Kareem Hunt got the ball 14 times in his, you know, return back after the Pacheco injury. But, you know, Chiefs got a lot of injuries there too. And I think if you look, a lot of these teams have a ton of injuries, but the Chiefs have been able to weather them so far, and so far be the class of the AFC, when many like you like think, hey, they could be easily 0-4 as they are 4-0.
Yeah, they really can. It's really frustrating.
Well, I mean, interesting next week, Monday night matchup for them. They go against, you know, they go against the Saints at home.
What Saints team are we going to see?
Exactly.
For the first 2 weeks, or was it just a mirage?
Yeah, could be. The offense hasn't been there the last 2 weeks. Is it going to be there at Arrowhead on a Monday night? But I think that's it'll be an interesting game, because a potential look ahead. The following week, the Chiefs are playing at San Francisco. I'm sorry, that's 2 weeks. They actually have the bye week before San Francisco. So do you come flat going into the bye week from the Chiefs' perspective? But a good win against a Chargers team that had, you know, Jim Harbaugh. They got rid of a lot of talent in the offseason, you know, kind of a little bit rebuilding, but they've been, you know, a very competitive team all year with the Chargers. And I don't want to say it's a surprising 2-2, but I think for all the talent that Herbert, you know, lost on the offensive side of the ball versus what they had, like they've been, they have kept in every game and been competitive.
Yeah. The offense looks pretty anemic. I'm just not used to seeing Herbert's stat line, like 179 yards. Like, he was coming out of college just having 300, 400 yard games. I think he has like what the record for like the most passing yards in year one, year two, year three, year four touchdowns. And now they got nobody to throw to.
I mean, you've seen you know, they've been definitely using J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards in the running game and getting the most out of them. And if you look at historically with Jim Harbaugh, like he's really an old school coach, man. He's going to throw a fullback out there. We're in the I formation and we're running downhill, and he's going to run the ball. So you look at his previous offenses at Stanford and San Francisco and at Michigan. So I don't think he's going to always have this quarterback that's going to go out, which is interesting because Harbaugh was a quarterback. You'd figure he'd want to have that. But, you know, he runs, you know, a very traditional offense that's not in the modern NFL game. He's not running the Kingsbury air raid offense. You know, it's going to be more ball control, you know, control the clock, 3 yards, wait for some big plays in the running game.
But his offenses are still dynamic, you know. Stanford.
They are.
They were high scoring. The 49ers were really entertaining. Michigan this past, you know, few years have been pretty entertaining.
They were, but think about the questions around Michigan was J.J. McCarthy. Like, it wasn't a quarterback that was doing a ton of lot, but it was.
They weren't asking the carry offense, no.
Yeah, they was big into the running game. And yeah. The running game, you know, I sound like a broken record at the same time, too. Else. Because, yeah, it leads a ton of stuff there, too. So you establish one of these things in the running game. That's where maybe Justin Herbert doesn't have to throw the ball, you know, 50 times a game. You know, he's able to really get some more, you know, quality passes that is going to open things up downfield and make it easier for him. But I don't think this is the year for the Chargers. I think you'll see maybe next year or the year after when some of this stuff matures. This is like the building blocks here for what the Chargers will be under Harbaugh.
Cool, man. I think that's it.
Yeah, I think that's the slate. I think a lot of good games coming up this week, and then you're going to go get into the bye weeks here with some of the teams. So,
this is the first
NFL's bye week, in full swing. Week, right? What was that?
This is the first week of bye weeks.
You might be right.
I'm excited to get back on Thursday night football. Who's playing Thursday night?
We got the Buccaneers and the Falcons, which will be
That'll be pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting game. Falcons
must win, you know, for them.
I don't know if it's a must win. They're 2-2, but I think it's a statement for them to say
divisional.
Yeah, division. I picked the Falcons at the beginning of the year. Many people did that. Hey, adding Cousins to the offensive pieces was going to be a dynamic offense. They haven't put it together yet. Baker's the one that's been dynamic. But I think that's a good early season divisional test that could be an indicator of who's going to carry this division down the stretch.
That'll be fun. Congrats to Aaron's Braves for winning one of the doubleheaders. So now they're in the playoffs. I was really looking forward to seeing them not be in the playoffs. But it is what it is. Wild card games, what, Tuesday? Wednesday? Best of three, right? Let's do some wild card picks then.
And so it's funny how... I was, I hate to bring this back to my team all the time, but it was...
Your White Sox? Was, congratulations, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Big winners. Big time. Winners. But interestingly enough, the most losses in MLB history, however, not the worst winning percentage or losing percentage in MLB history. The 62 Mets still, I think they still had a worse losing percentage because they only won 40 games. So they were 40-120 versus the White Sox, 41-121.
Okay, that's good news. I also found out they have the most in modern history, but not the most losses in MLB history. There's like some team.
Yeah, there's 18, something else out there.
Yeah, 140.
Don't take losses. It away from the White Sox, though. They're terrible. No.
It's a good...
They're terrible. We got a...
records were meant to be broken, man.
They are. We and I say we as White Sox fans got a letter from much maligned owner Jerry Reinsdorf to the fans on basically we're going to do better, but you know,
sell the team.
Yeah, this is the same team that basically said we're not going to sign any free agents and blah 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 blah. We're going to earn the trust back of the fans. So ultimate joke. We'll get more takes on Reinsdorf anytime because he absolutely has done nothing for that franchise after the 2005 World Series. But anyways, I was bringing up the White Sox
because it was going
because there was stat. I don't have the stats in front of me, but so there is three AL Central teams in this playoff.
Yeah.
And there was stats out there that if they didn't, if the teams didn't play the White Sox, several of them would be under 500.
Really?
Yeah. So if they didn't play the
stat for me, yeah.
I gotta look it up. But yeah, there was just egregious. So how, like, the White Sox were so bad, they gifted all of these wins to the Tigers and the Royals and the Guardians. So like they're I think the Tigers and Royals specifically probably are not in the playoffs if not for all the gift wins the White Sox gave them.
Probably not. No, I didn't realize how stacked that division was this year.
Well, you say stacked, and the, but yeah. they got three teams in the playoffs,
teams,
but
yeah.
they can thank the White Sox for all those gifts, for the reason that the AL Central has three teams, which many consider the worst division in baseball. But I think the White Sox delivered for the better of the division to get more teams in.
51 games back, that's impressive. All right, back to wild card. Mets, they're in the playoffs. They face the Brewers, Aaron's Braves against a red-hot Padres.
The Brewers we talked about a couple weeks ago have been very under the radar all year, basically coasting to the NL Central title. Not many people nationally talking about the Brewers. I think they had the
best record in baseball at one point, way under the radar.
Yeah, super under the radar. I think they take this series versus the Mets. I know the Mets will get a lot of the hype for the New York media as far as them coming back after their terrible start to the year. But I think the Brewers are just – the Brewers have been an interesting story all year, and I think they're under the radar. I think they get past the Mets fairly easily in the first round.
Okay.
If you go hop to Aaron's Braves, like, we can talk about him more. But Chris Sale was scratched from the start. I think will win the NL Cy Young, but probably will. I think they announced today he will not pitch in the Padres series at all, and they already have questions in their rotation. So while I think it's a good story for Atlanta as far as sneaking into the playoffs, I think San Diego, like, they have the studs in the rotation with King and Cease, that they win that series pretty handily as well too. So for all for nothing, I'm basically saying this Mets-Atlanta two games today meant nothing, and they're both going to get bounced very quickly.
For sure. Detroit and Houston.
Detroit's been an interesting story. And then in game one, they're going to have Skubal, who, you know, AL Cy Young right there. Houston still, like, weirdly owns the AL West and has really been, like, the class of the American League for
this decade.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Houston takes it out. Detroit's been a very good story, but I think you go chalk on this one as well, too, and Houston's going to win this series.
I always root for Detroit teams. I'm pulling for the Tigers for an upset, and I just can't see Houston going. I just don't want to see him even entertaining another World Series. I'm going against him out of hate, out of spite.
Out of hate and spite.
I'm fueled. KC and Orioles. Baltimore.
Yeah, Baltimore's just got just so much talent. I think they were potentially the second best team in the AL behind the Yankees for a lot of this season. I think the Orioles win this. Kansas City, another good story. But, I mean, I think my White Sox stat for both the Kansas City and Detroit story is, like, are these really playoff teams if they didn't play the worst baseball team of all time for a good portion of their schedule? But at Baltimore, just, man, they got a lot of good young players on that team, and I think talent will prevail. So, basically, I'm giving you, I think, all favorites to win these series. So
yeah, just going the easy road.
I'm going chalk, man. So Aaron's gonna come in and say he called Atlanta winning, and he picked Detroit or something like that. He will come up with some wild stuff, but I think this is chalk.
I think Baltimore might have, like, one of the better uniforms in MLB. But yeah, they're talented though. I got them winning that one. Cool, man. Baseball, playoffs, football, basketball gets started pretty soon.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff.
No life.
We got a couple weeks off of Formula One, so I think at a certain point we got the United States Grand Prix kicking off in Austin in a couple weeks. So maybe you and Aaron give me a few minutes on Formula One by myself as we get closer to the end of October with that.
Dude, I got to link back up with that Italian guy. We'll get him on board too, and then I can it'll give us some time to read up on that on Formula One.
Yeah, interesting stretch for Formula One. I bring it up because this has been a very good season for Formula One overall. There was some drama here a couple weeks ago with one of the more popular drivers, I think, on pop culture, Daniel Ricciardo. So if anyone's watched the Drive to Survive series, he's kind of been the kind of star of the series since its first season. You know, super personable guy, just got a kind of just like a draw to him that he's just, you know, got a lot of people into Formula One
really
from through this Netflix series. But he's had an interesting route from he was on the Red Bull racing team at the start of Formula One, had some success there, left for them, went to Renault, went to McLaren, and then was kind of out of the sport for a few months. And then the Red Bull sister team, at the time it was AlphaTauri last year, brought him back midway through the season to replace a driver who wasn't performing. And this was kind of this redemption story that was kind of playing out where Daniel Ricciardo wanted to get back to Red Bull because he left Red Bull because there was a young driver at that time, which is now three-time world champion Max Verstappen, was taking over as the team's number one driver. But now Ricciardo wanted to get back. I say all this because he lost his ride now with the Visa Cash App race Red Bulls, which is the second Red Bull team. So he's kind of done. His Formula One career is kind of over. This was kind of his swan song. So didn't get the redemption story he was looking for to go back to Red Bull to be the number two driver behind Max Verstappen. So it was kind of interesting for a guy that was kind of much beloved. Wasn't the most successful, never won a world championship. He won like seven races in his career. But when you look in the United States for the, I guess really it was the pandemic that got a lot of people into Formula One. I've been a fan of open wheel racing for a while, but as Formula One got onto the national stage in the United States, it's obviously huge in Europe and around the world, but Daniel Ricciardo was kind of like this star that was out there, and now he's no longer there. So interesting storyline going into the, now that it's coming to Texas, that we have two Formula One races in the United States over the next couple of months, and kind of like, yeah, I am not going. I'll be watching. I went to the British Grand Prix this year in Silverstone. Saw Lewis Hamilton win. It was a great win there. That was my one race for the year.
Nice.
So, but good Formula One season right now. We got it really tight in the Constructors' Championship, and then you got Max Verstappen, who's a three-time world champion, in the lead right now, but really has a bad car with Red Bull. This car has been terrible for several months, and McLaren, who took over the constructors' lead. You have Lando Norris really leading the charge and second in the points right now to come take him back. So it's going to be an interesting end of the Formula One season. So I'm going to be throwing this stuff into you guys and annoying it, just basically talking to myself about Formula One. But last year's season was a bore because Max Verstappen won basically all but three races. And so it was a wrap. People are like, Formula One's done in the U.S. And now they kind of delivered with a really, really great competitive season that have seen multiple drivers win multiple races. And you've had four constructors doing winning races and three of four in contention for the Constructors' Championship.
I did watch more Formula One this past year than I've ever done, just because, you know, my friend Alex is watching it. I have all these Italians around me watching it in San Francisco. San Francisco is actually a big Formula One city. Every bar is playing it. They're like, up early. It's almost like soccer, right? Or like you know,
it's 6 or 7 a.m. on a Sunday, man. It is an early watch.
Everyone's drinking their Irish coffee, so it's good vibe. But yeah, I did see Verstappen just win, and that's where I have a lot of questions for you when we get to it. Like the length of the cars. Basically, if you win the pole, you win the race. Just all this stuff. You can school me and Aaron on that stuff.
Yeah, different stuff with that. We have, you know, we have one more year of the current regulations of, you know, of the car, which is the end of this year and then next year. And then 2026, you got to basically a new regulations that will make the car smaller. You also have interesting ads of the series. Audi is coming into Formula One in 2026. And so Audi is taking over what's now the Sauber Formula One team, and Audi's going to make their own powertrains, so basically their own engines when they come into Formula One. So there's some things changing within that, and then a lot of driver moves, which is they call it silly season, where the drivers start moving to different teams and stuff. And it's been an interesting one play out throughout this entire year, because Lewis Hamilton, my favorite driver before the season started, seven-time world champion, leaves Mercedes, where he's won six world titles, right, and is going to Ferrari. And so basically the one of the greatest drivers of all time going to the legacy brand of Formula One next year, you know, and really gives them a really stacked driver lineup with Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc. So some interesting stuff going into next year with the last year of those regulations, and how tight the top of the standings have been with Red Bull, McLaren, Mercedes, and Ferrari.
Fuck yeah. I'm excited. How the wake awesome. Up really watch those.
We'll get it, man. It's some great races. This is kind of one of my favorite stretches, because you're going to get Austin, you're going to get Mexico, Brazil, Vegas. So you get kind of this Western, you know, North and South America races. And then right. they finish in the desert this year with Qatar and Abu Dhabi. So some really cool tracks that are very interesting in the fall. Kind of get overshadowed in the U.S. because it's football season. No one's talking about it. But since Aaron wasn't here, I was using some time up on this podcast to get in my Formula One talk.
Now we're good to go. You know, I'm actually really into cars. I don't know if you know this, but in high school and college, I used to race out Honda Accords and like Audis, and I rebuilt, you know, mainly German cars. I'm really good at that, but never got into F1 for whatever reason. I don't know. But if I could just spend all day wrenching in the garage, it's easy for me.
I'd say you can wrench it and I'll drive it, man.
Yeah. Cool, man. Fun podcast. College football, NFL, even like a little wild card baseball. I dig it. No Aaron. Peaceful.
I don't know. No some may say this podcast was better without Aaron. I don't know.
No crazy
some could be saying that.
I know. Cool, man. I loved it. We'll be back on Thursday. Sources from the Sofa. Follow us on X, Instagram. We got some YouTube shorts now. Some little clips on all the platforms. TikTok. We're on TikTok. We're going to have to get like a TikTok thing going. I don't know how to use TikTok, dude. I feel old.
I'm not dancing.
Yeah, we're not dancing. Maybe Aaron can dance. Cool, man. It was a good one. Peace.
Peace.